So once again, good morning to everybody. Just a very quick hint. Anybody in this room who has been attending the center meeting in Brussels, I might encourage you to get some coffee or some water, because probably you're going to be quite familiar with the slides that are coming up. To the rest of you, let me start saying like that I'm usually tempted to start a presentation by saying it's a pleasure to present. And now you can imagine, given the topic at hand, it's definitely not a pleasure to present, but nevertheless, I'm going to give you some insights on the disturbance of the name service for .de domains on May 12th. And that is just for the benefit for the community to learn from the flaws we encountered. So what am I going to present is what has really happened, what was the impact. I'm going to give you a chronology of the incident, and that should be from an external perspective. So how does Joe User see the incident, and how have, for example, internet service provider have seen the incident? I'll show you how we within our registry handled the incidents, and finally we'll show you which follow-up actions we have been taken and what their current actual status really is. So what happened? Well, basically 12 of DNIC 16 name server location loaded its own file that contained only about a third of the .de domain records. And that clearly leads to an effect like we had NX domain replies for domains that actually did exist. And for sure we had undeliverable mails, and we had various effects on other application using the DNS. At least I would make clear that other zones DE or DNIC is serving and our cooperation partners weren't affected. So how has it been looking from a perspective of an external viewing the incident? Well, DNIC received calls from the community saying, quote, something is wrong with the internet. And this is initially how we became aware of the problem. So let me just count that, or let me just call that count zero of the incident handling. And well, after 1 hour, we were capable of exclusively giving correct answers once again, although we still haven't had the full capacity available for the service. It took us another 2 hours to restore the complete capacity of the service, and it took us another 3.5 hours from count zero onwards to completely restore the process, including up-to-date zone file data. And that is quite clear what had happened. If you have a zone file that large as ours at hand, like it's almost a gigabyte, and you want to transfer that to a location, let's say Hong Kong, it takes quite some time, right? So how did we deal with the incidents? So when we became aware that there was something wrong with the internet in Germany, we immediately summoned our incidents response team to analyze, confine, and finally fix the problem. And the first thing we did is we looked whether or not there was a problem with the root servers. Why did we do so? Well, there were hints that something with the root servers might be wrong. What we found is basically there wasn't anything wrong with the root servers. But what we saw is that we had a disproportionate number of NX replies for .de domains. So, and that is quite the point in time when you start to take a look at your own processes. And let me just show you. Heads up, guys, this is new from Brussels. You haven't seen that. So this is more or less the process of publishing a zone file, very simplified, how we do it in .de. So there's a zone-generating server who's extracting zone file data from our NIC database, and that is transferred to a zone distribution server, and the zone distribution server is distributing the zone file to our currently 16 name server locations all over the world. Yep. Yet another one. Okay. So let's go into detail about that process and find out whether there's something wrong with that publishing zone files. So what we did do is the first question was, do we have a bug in the registration software that would in any way result in a corrupt database? And looking into that, the clear answer was no. Everything seems to be looking quite good. So next question would be, have we generated probably corrupt zone file out of the correct data? We found out, nope, wasn't the case. Next check we made was regarding the copy operation from the zone generating server to the zone distribution server. We checked the copy operation, and that was brilliant as well. So next thing we did, we looked into the zone file, and we made a plausibility check, just an MD5 hash, to find out whether the data within the copied zone file was authentic or not. Was looking good. So finally, going along that process of publishing a zone file, what was left to investigate was if there might be a bug in the protocol software that will have an impact on the zone file loading at the distributed remote server locations. And now, once again, wasn't looking good. So we're done, are we? So where was the problem? Okay, so what the problem was is that we conducted a project to completely innovate our name server infrastructure. And in the due course of that project, we rolled completely new equipment to our name server locations. And as this leads to the situation that we had at some stages old name server locations and new ones, meaning with already rolled new equipment, we adopted the zone distribution process. And what we exactly did do is that on the zone distribution server, we copied the zone file once again. And that is just simple from one directory to the other. And as simple as that, this copy failed. And it's getting even more simple. It failed because of insufficient disk space. So that was what the problem was all about. And as this copy went wrong, and as this copy was the source of distributing the zone file at least to 12 of our 16 name server locations, that was the problem. And well, we would have observed that quite clearly because it is standard to monitor our systems and to monitor copy operations and disk space, but we just simply haven't done that being right in the process of conducting this project. So that was the root cause. Well, incident handling, to go further on, was quite clear what we do have to do. We eliminated the storage problem. We successively shut down our name server locations, and we restarted them using a late intake predecessor version of our zone file. And then, as I told you already, we re-established the standard process. So what did we learn from the incident? What were our follow-up actions? Well, first, we implemented and deployed an MT5 check on the copying process from the on the distribution server, and we implemented a switch to interrupt automatic processing in case of any faulty results concerning this MD5 check. We integrated at least the respective servers and the standard hardness monitoring, and in addition, we implemented and deployed a script that would round-robin-like delete outdated zones from the distribution server. More medium-term action, we are currently investigating two means to mitigate. One would be that we are thinking about providing a backup zone at each name server location, and that we are going to implement an automatic rollback mechanism to activate those backup zone, which still might take an hour to accomplish. And that's why we're checking on the second alternative, and that will be that we are going to install a standby server at each of our locations, which is basically running a zone file, let's say, for example, a one-day-old one, and that we could really very, very fast switch to this zone file in any case of emergency. I think I showed that the incident handling was quite good. Nevertheless, even though this could be improved, and what we're thinking of improving this process is that we are going to envision potential other security incidents, that we think of formalizing stating respective optimized counteraction plans to this envisioned security incidents as well. We could be better in summoning our team. That's one thing we're going to do. We implemented switches to very fastly take our name servers off the net and bring them online once again, be it all of them or be it just one specific one. What we are going to do next is that we review our DNS monitoring functionality. Of course, as I told you before, this disproportionate number of NX domains that really didn't spring into our eyes, we do not want to see that again. Process-wise, well, We have been formulating quite a number of processes. We defined an incident response process. We do have a change and a release management process in place. What we do have to do is we do have to live up to these processes, and we do not have to circumvent them in a way. And we do have to take leverage of the professional service management and configuration management data tools that we do have already installed. Just make usage of them. And finally, we recruited an information security officer, and he's going to be in place starting from January 1st. And finally, we are thinking about an IT operational audit just to make sure that everything is running in the way we intended it to be for the forthcoming future. Well, that's about it. Any questions?
Questions?
I guess I'd like to ask you how you're feeling now. was it scary?
Yes, it was. Right in a situation, it definitely was. I think it went extremely good. If you take a look at the times that it took us to find out what was wrong and the time that it took to reinstall the service, at least that was correct again, and then that was that we regained the capacity we usually provide you guys with, then it was good, but nevertheless, it was scary in that situation. And how do I feel right now? Well, I do feel quite confident because it led us to implement further actions and make sure that hopefully this is not going to happen again, and we do have some additional quality gates which we haven't had in place before.
Okay. Ralph?
Yeah, well, I think that's probably it. This particular event is never going to happen again. There's going to be another one. And we have our occasional events as well, and I think in the end they're unavoidable. They get more complex. The cause of the event gets more complex because we take measures every time on the basis of previous events. And everything becomes redundant, and we do four eyes or six eyes, and in the end there will still be a combination of a technical failure and a human error, and yeah. You get a chain of reactions. And but that was your last point made me wonder, because you said that you were thinking about having security operations audits or technical operation audits.
Yeah.
Do you do any externally driven audits at this time of your system and your level of security?
We have been conducting several audits before. So we had a check of our network infrastructure. We had a check of our software architecture and so forth. What we haven't done so far is really looking into how we, for example, automatically or semi-automatically configuring our systems, how many scripts do we have in place, how do we test those scripts, do we have a test-driven operation or development process and things like that. So when I stated that we are going to go to conduct an IT operational audit, that is meant really down to techniques. It's nothing that should just simply look whether or not you do have formally stated any kind of process, like ITIL processes, are they there? It's not only that we do want to stick to best practice processes. I do want to find out whether they are really lived up to, and that should be done by this external IT audit. But it hasn't been done so far.
Okay, thank you.
Patrick?
Patrick Jones from ICANN staff. This is really useful information, and I hope you're going to be volunteering for the working group, assuming the charter is approved.
At least I was in a charter drafting group, so okay.
Okay, Patricio.
Yeah, thank you. A question and a reflection. The question is, how did the community react, and what do you think the damage to your reputation was, if it was significant? And the reflection is that I wish that we could learn about this as a community in a more permanent way. In a way that would benefit even people who weren't here today. There is a great little book by Dr. Atul Gawande called The Checklist Manifesto that I think should be mandatory reading. He develops the concept of checklists as coming as they do in the aviation industry, but for many other lines of activity or business. He is a medical doctor, but perhaps we in the CCTLD community could try to do something like that, in the sense that we could have procedures or checks that we could all use. But my question was about the community reaction and the effect on your reputation.
So our community reaction was, everybody seemed to feel sad with us. And for sure, it not only had an impact on .de, I think it might even have had an impact on the industry, like all the other flaws we encountered had. So, for example, our colleagues from Sweden, they have been reporting about their incidents, and we saw some other incidents we already heard of in certain or on certain lists. So it more or less affects our industry. But one thing I would like to point out is nobody of us is flawless, and faults do appear if you change systems. And that to more basically, when I was talking about root causes and so on, and I was pointing to the insufficient disk space, all that was just due to the fact that we did change the running system. But this is our job, and we're going to do that over and over and over again. So there is a tendency, there is an ongoing risk that this is going to happen in one or the other way to somebody else as well, because we are changing our systems. Concerning the reaction of the community, well, it was getting into the news, if you want to, all over the place. And there was a quite substantial pressure on us to communicate really intensively what has happened. But this was extremely in an extremely early stage. So we were really pressurized on releasing information at a time even we weren't sure what was really going on. And at a time where we were really concentrating on fixing the situation and getting the system running back again. So that was one of the major challenges, to efficiently communicate to the expectation of the different stakeholders. And that's why I said that we would review our communication plan, because I think the incident's handling hasn't been under criticism, not at all, and I'm quite proud how we handled it. But there has been substantial criticism concerning how we communicate about the incident. And for example, and I do know that there had been some flaws in communication as well. For example, we did inform our German community with German statements, but we were a little bit slow with international statements, so we got that back, and there were some hints that we might want to use Twitter, for example, just to make sure that everybody somehow gets aware of the situation, that there is a problem. So we are looking into communication plans for the future. But I hope I'll never, ever have to present that they are really effective.
Okay, Yayong.
Yes, Yayong Lee.kr. Two questions. I think whenever you're rolling out a new system, this is something that can happen to anybody. And with IPv6 coming on, and maybe IDN mail servers and so on, this is something that would concern everyone. Two questions. One is, you told us about the reaction from your community. My first question is, were any of them legal actions against you?
No.
Second one is, I know you said you tried to do everything, but looking back, is there something that you should have done that you didn't do, that you would have done differently?
The answer to your first question is clearly no legal action against us. Second one is a little bit tricky, because for sure we did install loads of quality gates, and what we found out was what Rudolf mentioned. You can install quality gates till you might oversee just one crucial point, and then it's going to hit you. So would I have done anything in a certainly different way? None that I can think of, because, well, it wasn't foreseeable.
Thank you.
Thanks.
So, thank you, Jörg. Thank you for sharing such a touchy experience. And by the way, Jörg, the slides will not be shared or posted to the public, right?
Hi. I have a question from a remote participation room, and it's Bill Samick. He's wondering why there was not enough disk space on your new hardware.
So the answer would be he confused the different equipment. So the new equipment is the one that is installed in the remote name server locations, where the insufficient disk space was within our central data center on the distribution server. And that was not a new one.
Okay. And how about the sharing, the slides?
Let me think about that. Okay?
Okay. Thank you, Jörg. Okay. So next is from Oscar.mx.
Thank you, Hiro. It's kind of my seat there because I'm kind of... Thank you once again. I want to talk to you about our disaster response plan that we have implemented in NIC Mexico. I am Oscar Robles, General Director of NIC Mexico, .mx Registry Manager. And what I'm going to tell you is how we faced two major disasters in Mexico and Monterrey City specifically. And we did it in two phases. But let me start with some comments before. When we started to think about implementing a DRP, we thought that it was only for paranoid people, and we thought that we shouldn't do that. That even though Mexico was prone to disasters, Monterrey City wasn't. So why should we implement a DRP? Reviewing statistics about disasters, natural disasters, of course, was showing us that we didn't need a disaster response plan. So we are, even though we are not the military, so why should we have a DRP? But we did it because we thought that was the right thing to do. And we finally end up implementing some paranoid solutions for our operation. And I think that it paid very high dividends. Let me tell you about that. In 2009 and 2010, we faced two disasters. In April 2009, the influenza H1N1 pandemic forced the shutdown of Mexico's economy for a week. So we had to close our main office for a week, and we had to remain operational for that week. And then, a year later, in June 2010, 5 months ago, a Hurricane Alex destroyed a good part of Monterrey, streets, infrastructure, bridges, and affected connectivity around the country for days, because Monterrey is the natural gateway to Mexico's internet for many carriers, not only for a single carrier. So most employees were not able to drive to our main office for days, and we had to maintain operational in that time. All business units of NIC Mexico, as I was telling you, remain operational during these two main disasters. And the customer service and internal project development, which is a very good part of NIC Mexico's operation, were never interrupted during these events. Working from home lowered the risk of people get injured because of we lowered the possibility to get in touch with this pandemic situation, or lowered the risk of going through flooded streets and highways. And no employee was injured during the execution of this DRP. So let me tell you some details about this. First, you should note that NIC Mexico has three main units, business units. One is the registry, which is in charge of the .mx service for all the registrars, accredited registrars. We have so far 220 registrars accredited. NIC Mexico Register is just one of the accredited registers and has nearly half of all the domain names. We are a middle-sized registry. And we have also the National IP Registry, which is in charge of internet addresses allocation in Mexico or to Mexican ISPs. We started defining service-level agreements between the business units first. So we decided that the DNS is the most critical part of our operation, and that should be addressed before everything else. But we should have a 100% availability of this service in our infrastructure for all the business units. Oh, I'm sorry. For the registry, for the registrar, and for the NIR. Then, with the EPP or with the hosting infrastructure in our registrar, we come up with a 99.9% as an SLA. In the NIR, it's not finished yet because the EPP is going to be deployed in April, so it is not operational, but it is a 99.9% as a compromise. Internal compromise. The extranet, the web face, the web page user interface is also has also a 99.9% of availability, and all other systems like internet, CRM or customer relationship management systems, ticketing systems, email, messaging, customer support chat, PBX are as well 99.9%, but in case of a disaster, the time for resuming operation is has to be less than 8 hours in all these three business units. So that was our goal in 2005. Also, there are some other small applications or services, corporate services like software developing, infrastructure management, payroll, accounting. Those are on their best effort basis. So no SLA, by the basically. So how was the what were the main the first objectives of this DRP in 2005? The first objective was, as I was telling you, to achieve 100% time uptime on the DNS. We implemented Anycast. We started implementing Anycast in 2003. We deployed our first DNS Anycasted in 2003, but we finished the Anycasted in all our DNS infrastructure in 2005. But the DNS was the easiest part because this is a single service. This is a very well known protocol, and it's a very simple operation if compared with the rest of the operations. So we have to think also about the rest of the operations, not only the DNS. The DNS is geographically distributed. In Americas, United States, Mexico, and Chile so far, but we needed to think about all the rest of the infrastructure. This was in 2005, as I was telling you, and we had in that moment all the services, all the external services in this main data center, which is a carrier class data center. I don't know if you are familiarized with the carriers in Mexico, but this is the internet data center of Telmex, one of the biggest carriers in Latin America. So we had all our external services there, and we had the benefit that many of the component of this infrastructure has had. Or was redundant in this data center. Servers, routers, firewalls, switches. And this data center may be operational during weeks with the diesel stored on site. And of course, they could call pipes with more diesel and it could remain operational for months. But this is a career cloud data center. We had our small data center, which used to have the CRM, the ticketing system, the software development, and of course it was managed by our personnel. The equipment in this internet data center is also managed by us, but it's just stored in the internet data center. Our small internet data center could remain operational only 48 hours with diesel stored inside. So it was a very small operational time. It was we were lucky that we didn't face any disaster during this period because, as you may see, we were depending on a single link from our facilities to the internet. And we were going first to the internet data center and then to the internet. We were lucky that we didn't have any situation here with these two links or even with this internet data center. Our reasoning was not negligent, but we thought that if something would happen to this internet data center, maybe we shouldn't care about Dotemex because this internet data center contains like 10,000 companies in Mexico, and maybe nobody would care about Dotemex if this internet data center fails. But anyway, we were lucky to not have any major disaster to face during this first iteration or after this first iteration. What we learned from this first phase? That we are not experts in data center management or building, and it became very difficult to keep our internal services running in case of a disaster in our small internet data center in our office. For example, we are not a big consumer of diesel, so nobody would care to provide us or provisioning enough diesel to our facilities in case of a disaster. So that was a high risk. Then we see that there was a bottleneck in this scheme because if all employees connect from their home, then the bandwidth between our main office and the data center became a bottleneck because everybody would have to try to access internet, then the data center, then our facilities, and access the applications contained in our small data center. So this 10 megabit per second link was a very small one, and so we learned that was a bottleneck. Applications running in PCs require a lot of bandwidth, and the standard 2 megabit access that is provided by regular ISPs in Mexico was not enough. So we needed to change the process, and we need to think in a more efficient way of accessing the applications. So the second iteration had different goals. First, all personnel must be able to work comfortable from their home, well, comfortable in a internet link speaking, using just 1 megabit broadband connection instead of 2 or 3 or 4 that was needed before. Nothing should depend on the small data center in our main office. I mean, we should have only the closet of communications to manage the links between our two main data centers. And a backup data center must be installed for this purpose. All the external and internal services, like the intranet, must be offered from the main and the backup data center with redundancy and high level of synchronicity. Real-time synchrony of data must be achieved between those two data centers. We thought that we should be testing or using, rather than testing, the DRP continually, periodically. And world peace must be achieved in less than 12 months. So far, we achieved almost everything. Okay. And this is the new diagram. It's very basic. I'm not talking about some technical details, but of course I'm able to direct you to my technical people to explain you if you need something with more detail. It was implemented. This second iteration was implemented in 2009, and as you can see, we have already now two data centers, the primary and the backup one, with a ring among between us, main office as well, a high level of communication, speed between these three facilities, the main office and the primary and backup data center. But we had to solve some issues. One, for example, was the location backup, the location of the internet data center backup. We decided to have it in Monterrey as well, in the same metropolitan area. Why? Because Mexico's topology, internet topology, is quite similar. It's not in the middle of the internet. It's a node. It's in the corner of the internet. So the rest of the country is deeper in this internet topology rather than in the outside. So having a data center in Mexico City, for example, would not save us from nothing, and maybe it would be more dangerous for us because Mexico is a prone place for earthquakes. And the Monterrey area is a gateway for 90% of the internet traffic in Mexico. So we come up with this idea, and so far it's working well, but we're still thinking where should we put another or change in our backup data center. Anyway, we are working with this decision of having both data centers in the same metro area. Of course, different topology, different carrier, different links, still same metro area. We should communicate both data centers, but in Mexico, telecommunication industry is kind of complicated, so it was a big issue to intercommunicate these two biggest carriers with a link and a high speed link. And we should reduce the amount of services offered in our small data center. There were some technical aspects that we should solve. For example, the synchrony between the main data center and the backup data center has to be kept with the on-time or online backups, backups are made on disk and they are transferred between the main and backup data center. We have this online synchrony. We have backups that are transferred periodically, and we have data tapes backups that we store in our facilities and in an external provider like Iron Mountain. So all of those backups are encrypted. So of course, this is as long as you keep doing all these things, you have to think in the processes behind these procedures because the operation is becoming even more complex. We are thinking on the implementation of DNSSEC and how it could affect. And this is not a single this is not a small step. The DNSSEC could affect many of our current processes. So that's one of the reasons we are delaying the implementation of DNSSEC, because that may put more risk in our operations than the things that may solve with implementing the DNSSEC. I'm not going to go into all these details. You have the presentation online. But as I was telling you, you may ask any other details. Just telling you a few small things. Our infrastructure is used every day to access it, to access this new schema, new scheme, from home or from the, our travels, and is tested all the days. So when we are in our offices, we are actually like traveling, because we have to connect to a VPN, and it's all is every day is being tested, this infrastructure. The system administration is remotely as well, with a keyboard video monitor over IPs, over IP installed in each data center. Systems are accessed through IPsec and also through PSTN accesses, telephone lines. Monitor systems are implemented with gateways SMT to SMS, or even with the GSM modem that we had in our facilities. The telephone service is one that we have to deal with, because it is still in our facilities, but we are just planning to move it in the first quarter of next year. And two small comments. The first disaster, with the flu A H1N1, the second iteration was completed just before this H1N1 disaster. The detection of this new strain of the swine flu in Mexico created a global alert, and our government ordered to shut down operations and businesses. Our office remained closed, but we remain operational thanks to this DRP. Everybody worked from their home. The second disaster, Hurricane Alex, we had rain for in 40 hours, the amount of rain that it usually rains in 1.5 years. So our infrastructure is not able to handle that. I mean, our city infrastructure is not able to handle that. But so far, our infrastructure did support that situation. Personnel were not able to drive to our main office for 3 days, but we remain operational thanks to this DRP. Conclusion. DRP has have allowed us to remain operational even when major disasters strike to our city or country. Continuously testing and using of our DRP allows us to react quickly to any eventuality, and executing a DRP is as easy as telling everyone to go home and work from there. We test and use this DRP twice a year, just as a testing process. We hope not to use DRP again, but we are prepared for everything, almost everything, unless Maya's end of the world prophecy becomes true. Okay, that's my what I have to present. I don't know if you have any comments.
Okay, thank you, Oscar. So, quick questions, if any.
Jörg?
So, thanks, Oscar, for the presentation. Just one question about that. How long will it take to switch the operation between the two data centers? Is the intention to do it instantly, or is there an accepted delay of time that it takes to switch those operations?
There is an amount of time. We have done this several times, and it's going down to between 4 hours and 5 hours. We have done this in Saturday or Sundays, but the DNS services remain operational. We only shut down the user interfaces, the EPP, but we have this schedule slot time windows.
Yep. Matthew?
Thank you, Oscar, for the great presentation. At the beginning of the presentation, you provided us with service level goals.
Yep.
Has this process and the setting of the two data centers actually led to improvements
in the service levels you're seeing on a daily basis. I mean, obviously, if these are your goals, you are not there. Have you seen tremendous improvement? Has it been neutral? Or has the result even been, negative because of increased complexity?
Yes. Currently, we are achieving these goals, but this is not a one-time goal and everything is done. But we have to keep reaching these goals continuously, in a continuously basis. But the thing is that we didn't have any major problem before we implemented this second phase. But the thing is that we didn't measure the level of service of this server unit. So I'm not sure where we were, but I could tell you that at this moment we are reaching these levels of services.
Great. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. And thank you for the floor's interest on this topic. So thank you, Oscar.
Thank you.
Okay, so the session is over now. Okay. Chris?
Thanks, Hiro. Thank you, everybody. Okay, Andre, Simon, we're going to move on to our next session, which is an update on the various reviews that ICANN is conducting as part of its commitments under the Affirmation of Commitment. And so we're going to get the first one is on the security panel. Yeah. And then I'll do a brief update on the ATRT, Accountability and Transparency Review Team, and then it's coffee time. Oh, sorry, one other thing, just so that you know. After coffee, the agenda says we're going to do the CCTLD news service, and we are, but we're going to move the item following that, which is the ITU Plenipot outcome, up to before the CCTLD news session and then the CCTLD news session, and then we'll move into the lunch arrangements. So, guys, are you ready? Or cool, off you go.
Good morning, everybody. So we just thought we could give you a quick brief on what's going on with the security, stability and resiliency of the DNS review. This is the second committee tasked with this job. It's been mandated as part of the Affirmation of Commitments. And hopefully we'll have some slides on screen just to show if we got. Okay, well, Andres, we're trying to work that out.
Maybe
there we go. So really the
Oh, really?
The team's really commitment was to take a look at what ICANN is doing specifically around preserving the security, stability, and resilience of the DNS, as you can see up here on screen. And so the team was commenced in about October the 1st of this year, so it's still fairly young in formation. And we met for the first time face-to-face only yesterday, so most of what you'll be seeing today is pretty fresh and hot off the press. Andre, do you want to should we get the next slide?
Okay.
Well, we have a quite broad team. We come from all the geographic regions. There are like three ways how you could become a member of the team. Either you would be nominated by a supporting organization or advisory committee, or you could be an independent expert or designated nominee by the selectors. So you can see the names of the screen of the people who were nominated by supporting organization or advisory committees. You can see that there are two people from CCNSO, which is me and Simon. On this slide, you will quickly see the rest of the team. So as you can see, there are all regions. On the first face-to-face meeting, the one of the major goals was to elect a chairman and maybe some structure of the working group. So we decided we'll have one chairman and one vice chair. So the chairman is Alejandro Pisante and the vice chair is Andrea Rigoni. And there was also some recognition that there is one key person, which is Bill Manning, who is running root server and was nominated by RSSAC. So it's also somebody who is somehow recognized in the team as a key person for the work of the team. Do you want to continue?
So the first thing that the team really got together to look at was really how do we put some structure around what we're doing? How do we turn this group of individuals who had only met for the first time yesterday into a kind of a working party that could actually make some quite rapid progress? And what we came up with was a four-point approach to the next 12 months' worth of work for the team, which was really split into four things, which is one was the scope of the responsibility of the group. It's quite a wide remit when you talk about security, stability. How wide does it go? Is it just the DNS? Does it go a lot wider? Really, the second point was then to take a look at just the technical threats. And we focused initially on threats and then really started to talk more about risk. We felt that that threat made it a very binary kind of discussion. Is it a threat? Isn't it a threat? But actually, when you start to talk about risk, it becomes a little bit more of an analog discussion, which becomes about, well, how risky is a specific issue that's out there at the moment? And that really helps us to talk about things like process risks. I think when people talk about threats to stability and security, you instantly think about criminal behavior, instantly think about abuse of the DNS. But actually, as we know, in the last few months, we've seen incidents around the world which have been caused by maintenance issues or human error. So we wanted to make sure we captured that in that landscape. Thirdly, we then wanted to take a look at, well, what were ICANN's strategic plans around security, stability, and resilience, and line those up with that landscape and say, well, how do these match? And then fourthly was to then take a look at the implementation plan and whether ICANN was putting the right measures in place or whether we needed to recommend new measures to ICANN. And what was interesting about this debate was, particularly, I'm sure many of you are aware around the debate around DNS cert at the moment, and of course we have a joint committee looking into that. But one of the things that became quite interesting around the debate was, could this actually change some of the findings of this committee? Could it change what ICANN's responsibilities are, whether that's to increase those or even decrease them? So that was one of the things that was debated quite hotly.
Maybe one thing is very important. We started to discuss the scope of the working group, and we thought that we should look at the security of the DNS as a whole. But we understand the fact that ICANN has very limited role, so he cannot influence all the parties that are involved in the process. But we would like to look at the things: how are the contingency plans in case that some party will fail, or how ICANN is ready to deal with situation that he cannot influence, but maybe it can deal with and work with. So that's the scope. It's a little bit broader than just ICANN itself, but we understand that ICANN has very limited role, limited technical role in the whole game.
So having said all that and put up those four key points, we then kind of very quickly focused on, well, how quickly do we want to get this done? Now, in principle, the review period extends for 3 years, but we felt clearly that was far too long a work period. So what became very apparent very quickly was to try and deliver something concrete within the first 12 months, and that delivery would be informed by public comment and feedback from the community all the way through those steps. So the idea being is that the group will, within the first 12 months, provide a recommendation to ICANN, or its first set of recommendations to ICANN, give ICANN time to digest those recommendations, give the community time to digest those recommendations, and then to see an implementation of that first phase, so that the group can then immediately see whether it's having a useful impact on ICANN. So we felt it was absolutely vital to make quick movement along that. And so we'll need to put in processes that will allow us to deliver work packages quite quickly. And in fact, the group aims to have its first terms of reference document out for consultation by the end of January of 2011. So aiming it quite quickly to have something out on paper for comment for the group.
Okay, and maybe last thing, it was more like we discussed the way how we should work with the information, what we will be able to publish, if our meetings will be open or not. So we agreed that by default all the meetings or the materials are open. We also agreed that if some member really requires, he can ask for Chatham House rules. So that means that everything would be scribed, but the names will be not in the in the minutes. So that sometimes helped to to speed up the discussion, to express ideas that may be a little bit conflicting with the interests of the organization or association, but maybe it's necessary to say that. But that would happen just on the request of some team member, and we also agreed that all the materials will be published and public unless we would work with some classified materials that are necessary to keep private. So that's we really want to keep the highest possible level of transparency of the work of the working group.
Just to say, I think the team will be publishing with the help of the ICANN staff, will be publishing effectively a wiki-style document for anybody to contribute into the activities of the team. So the plan is for other folk with expertise who feel they want to comment at any point in the procedures who will be able to add into that wiki document as well. So that will soon be published, I think, fairly shortly. That's it from us in terms of the update.
Hang on a second, Jay. Gabby? Jay wants to say something. While that's happening, I may have missed it because I was doing something else. Sorry. Have you got independent experts appointed?
Yes, we do have independent experts, yeah. Yes.
Right, and who decided who those independent experts were going to be? Hold on.
I'm not sure.
I believe it was between Rod and Heather,
Rod and Gutcherman, right?
This is microphone bingo. It's great. Okay, so yeah, the reason I ask is because in the ATRT, the actual ATRT itself chose the independent experts, and it's maybe slightly unusual that where you're doing a review of something that the people that you're reviewing would actually choose them. But anyway, thank you. Jay.
Thank you. It wasn't in the risk section. It wasn't clear to me whether you are limiting yourself to reviewing how ICANN conducts risk assessments or whether you're also intending to conduct your own risk assessment and compare the output of that with the ICANN risk assessment and the DNS SSR working group, joint working group risk assessment.
Hi, Jay. Okay, I think the discussion around the risk landscape was very much that it felt that the group would try as best as possible to identify the widest possible risk landscape, being very aware that the edges of that might be somewhat grey, and being also very aware that ICANN has a very limited purview and responsibility within that risk and threat landscape, if you like. But the plan was to come back with an assessment of the overall landscape and also where ICANN should be specifically addressing those points within the landscape, but also recognising that there were, for example, if we take the issue around BGP routing, that's clearly not a DNS issue, but it has a clear impact on the DNS that transits over that routing. So clearly identifying threats within that was important, even if the final recommendation to ICANN may not be that there's anything you can do about this within your limited mandate, but you certainly can have a position on it.
Matthew?
Yes. Thank you both for your presentation and for your contribution in participating in this review team. You both mentioned things like taking into account that ICANN has a limited scope and mission in terms of security of the internet and so on and so forth. And I think you were right to recall this. But I am not clear whether it's in the review team scope to assess whether ICANN is doing mission creep with regards to this limited scope, or if it's only the review team that is going to limit itself to this aspect of ICANN. Is there a clear view on that within the review team at the moment?
So if I think I understand your question right, Maciej, are you saying that I think we felt as a team that as part of the very nature of reviewing such a wide landscape is going to identify, hopefully, exactly where ICANN sits in terms of what it does and doesn't have as its mission, being aware that we may well be advising them on stuff that is not necessarily their mission, but they do need that position, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I just want to check that the review team
assesses whether ICANN is going outside of its mandate or not. And I, because I think it's a very important aspect of these review teams to assess whether ICANN is efficient or not, but also whether it fulfills its role or goes beyond or not.
I think it's inevitable that we will end up making recommendations. I don't believe that the group has at its heart, right at the moment, as you saw, a specific mandate to put a hard fence around ICANN's ICANN's mandate right at this point. I suspect we will end up developing a position, though, if that makes sense.
Jay again. I just want to make sure I understand this. Then the review team is quite deliberately going to have a mandate that is far wider than ICANN and is then going to make recommendations to ICANN on things within its within ICANN's mandate and other things that are not within ICANN's mandate.
Now again, we would like to take DNS ecosystem as a whole. We would like to understand what are the main risks that can somehow harm the ecosystem, that can be dangerous. And then we would like to see how ICANN, within his limited technical mandate, can help to mitigate some of the risk, or how he can work to how to deal with some of the risk. But definitely, we just look at the broader picture to understand what ICANN can do in that broader picture, within his borders, within his mission and mandate.
That seems to me that's going beyond the purpose of a review. You're now looking at the wider risks that go to the internet and then seeing how ICANN fits in with that rather than seeing how ICANN's doing its job and then reviewing that.
I think that's a fair point. I think the problem with reviewing any threat landscape is it's very difficult to isolate just down to specific things that ICANN are responsible for. And I think if we just take a look at some of the BGP routing issues we've seen of late, you know, clearly if we see other issues such as that in the internet ecosystem, and people point the finger straight at this community and say, what are we doing about it? And we hold our hands up and say, well, that's not our issue at all. Then I think we've missed an opportunity to be at least commenting and having a position that is carefully considered. And whether it's ICANN's responsibility is another matter.
Well, I think the issue is more the responsibility of the review team. I wasn't under the impression you were there to review the threat landscape. I was under the impression you were there to review ICANN's response to the threat landscape.
But surely you have to be informed by the wider landscape in order to make a proper judgment of ICANN's position.
Yes, you do, but I think maybe there's some confusion here. Yes, you do need to be informed, but being informed, you would then go out and review the bits of the information that you've got that are relevant to ICANN. What you wouldn't do, at least I think what Jay is saying, is that what you wouldn't do is be informed about everything you have to be and then say, right, we're going to review ICANN's response to the bits that are relevant and we're going to look at the other bits. If the other bits are just being provided for information, that's perfectly wonderful and that's certainly how it should be. The question is, why would you take the time, make the effort, et cetera, to review the things that are not part of ICANN's mandate? Is that's what you're saying? Yeah.
I think it's very fair. We definitely don't want to be effectively reviewing stuff that is not part of their mandate. I think what we're just trying to recognise is that it's a world of grey when it comes to a threat landscape, not a world of black and white. And while there are some issues that are clearly DNS, there are some that fold between DNS and other areas, and I think it would be remiss of us not to at least be well informed in those areas.
Okay, let me say what I think the elephant in the room is, and then we'll see where we go from there. I would not want to see the results of this review team being used as a justification for ICANN to change the way it handles security and stability. So if the review team comes back and says, the green bit is ICANN, and we reviewed that, and it's doing a brilliant job. The blue bit isn't, and no one's doing a job. In which case, ICANN is an opportunity for ICANN to say, well, we'll take over the blue bit then. I know, I mean, that's very simplistic, but that's kind of where it is. So I would encourage you to make absolutely certain that you stick rigidly to the mandate. The joint cross, whatever the right word is, security and stability working group that we will hopefully have set up later on today is going to do all of that stuff, and it will be totally careful about what it says. You guys just need to make sure that you don't get pulled in to a result that is not what you would, you know, that is used in a way that you would not expect it to be.
Thanks. I think point taken from both Jay and Chris. Thank you. I think we'll feed that back into the team and make sure that we do exactly that.
Thanks. Anyone else? Thank you very much indeed. Okay, we're ready for coffee. This will be brief on the ATRT because you all pretty much know where we are with that. Draft report's been published. Comments have been made. The ATRT has spent time in the last 3 days sitting together and on email, tweaking the recommendations, twiddling the bits around the edges, etc., etc. And we don't have a 3-year deadline. We have a deadline of the 31st of December. Our intention is to actually send the final report to the board before Christmas because, you know, we don't want to be doing it after Christmas. And then, of course, it's a question of what happens next. Let me say a couple of things very quickly. First of all, this team has done a huge amount of work. I want to acknowledge Becky specifically for the effort that she put in originally on the team, and in fact has continued to put in by bending my ear on a weekly basis about the way things should be, which has been really great. I know she's not in the room, but you are in the room. Thanks, Beck. See, I can't see you at the back there. Secondly, no one should underestimate how seriously the US government, and specifically Larry Strickling, takes the affirmation of commitment. Larry especially, who signed it for the US government, takes it very seriously indeed. And perhaps that's why the letter that Larry sent to Rod the other day was couched in the terms that it was. He takes it very, very seriously. We've come up with a series of recommendations which are not going to, some of which are going to be really easy for ICANN to implement logistically, some of which are going to be harder, some of which will cost money, some of which will have budget implications. So realistically and fairly, I wouldn't expect them to, you know, roll everything out within the next week or two. But there is a blueprint there for them to solve a number of the issues around openness, accountability, and transparency. And it is given that in a few months' time, it'll be at least partly my job to make sure that these recommendations get dealt with. I can assure you that I'll be doing that. In fact, I've already been given a list by the ATRT of the things they'd like to see done first, please. So, I don't really have anything else to say. I'm happy to answer anybody's questions. I think really it's more the key here is we get the report finished, we get it out, and then we wait and see what happens. The AOC says, the affirmation of commitment says, the board must take action by June. Now, it doesn't say that action could be to tear the report up and throw it in the bin, although I suspect that would be an unwise action to take. But they must take action by June. Anyone got any questions? Brilliant. All right. So, coffee, 11 o'clock, ITU Plenty Pot. Oscar and Keith, if you could be ready for that, and could you please make an effort to be back on time? It would be really fantastic if we could start at 11 o'clock. Thanks, everybody.